If you don't pay your credit card bill, hopefully you understand how that could impact you directly, as well as the ripple effect it would have on your family economically. Now, multiply that, how about a trillion or so times, and you'll get a picture of what the federal government is staring at with the debt ceiling. Thanks in great part to politics, of course. Now, are you one of those who's asking, well, why should I care if the U.S. government can't pay its bills? Believe me, you really should care. Now, if you don't want to believe me, listen to the insight my next guest is here to share. He's an economist with the American Institute for Economic Research, Peter Earle. Thanks for being here today, sir.
Thanks for having me.
American Institute for Economic Research website, AIER.org. We, of course, have that linked up at our homepage. Now, a little fast history as far as the debt ceiling concept is concerned. This isn't that new. It actually goes back to the early 20th century. What was the purpose of it?
Sure. So early in the foundation of the Republic, and for quite some time, Congress would issue debt, but with specific purposes. So if you wanted to build a canal, if they wanted to finance a war, they would actually draw up debt for that specific purpose. But that came to an end with World War I, because what happened was basically they weren't sure how much things were going to cost. So they first established a $5 billion debt limit on new issues of bonds related to the war, and then that had to be extended. And then finally, in 1939, at the end of the Great Depression and with World War II about to start, Congress basically eliminated all the different limits, and now we have the thing we have today, which is the debt limit that's established periodically.
And this is actually a thing in reverse. This is an effort to pay what's already owed, not collecting money
right.
To pay what will be due.
Right. So what happens is essentially the money is spent, and then the debt ceiling. I mean, you're absolutely right. The debt ceiling eventually becomes sort of a search for how are we going to pay for this, which is as backwards as one can imagine.
Well, look at what we're talking about here, federal government. So why should we be surprised by that concept? Now, when you look at the hurdle that's before the situation. The House GOP wants to raise the debt limit, but they want to cut spending, which sounds great to most people of economic sanity, certainly when you look at spending in the U.S. government. Has that always been the case where one went hand in hand with the other, or has it always been, as the term goes, a clean debt ceiling bill?
Well, I mean, it has been clean many times. It really, in 2011, under Obama, we had this the first debt crisis or debt ceiling sort of stalemate, where the ratings agencies actually, for the first time, lowered very slightly, but they nevertheless they lowered the rating on U.S. debt, and now it's become a very contentious thing. It seems to happen just about every time that we have this sort of issue. It didn't happen really under the early part of the Trump administration, where we had the administration essentially held, Republicans had the executive and the House and the Senate. So there was less of an issue there.
So as I said, the casual viewer observer of all this might be thinking, well, it's same old, why should I care about government and spending and whether or not they can pay their bills? But this could have serious implications, even, you referenced 2011, even just getting close to that proverbial cliff could impact the person listening right now.
Sure, and actually, a couple of days ago, Yellen said we had until June 1st or June 8th or something like that. But actually, there's just, as of today, there's only 11 or 12 legislative days left to negotiate this. So the field of possible outcomes is actually narrowing very rapidly. And that's important to, the average person on the street, because any number of things would happen. I mean, the first thing is that, the first thing that would happen is if we essentially didn't pass some sort of debt limit and defaulted, would be we would see financial markets, in particular stock markets, and that means, your 401k or whatever, probably crater. Probably, I've seen estimates of anywhere from 30% to 50%, which would be a crash in the stock markets that dwarfed anything previously, including 29. It would actually be twice as bad as 1929. We would also see anybody who is reliant upon Social Security or related services, they wouldn't get their checks. So it would be a really devastating thing for the average person who until the very point where we reached that default, probably hadn't been following it very closely. So it would also be a surprise.
I've heard some commentators and financial analysts say that if it lasted for about a week, there was an actual default. Could be as much as 1 million jobs lost and about 5% of the economy get wiped out. Expand that timeline to about 6 weeks or so. This was from Moody's, for example. They put the cost at 7 million jobs. Unemployment rate, which we just saw drop down to 3.4% last report, would rocket up to 8%, and the economy would lose more than the 5%, with the effects and the recovery possibly lasting decades.
I mean, it would be difficult to recover from, that's for sure. But, I mean, it would be all the worse because right now we have high inflation. It's still high. I mean, it's off the highs of last summer, but we're still kind of talking about a roughly 5% CPI, which is 2.5 times what it was for many decades. We're talking about 1.1% growth in the first quarter of this year, which is emaciated and really was only held up by government spending. So, you know, the National Bureau of Economic Research hasn't blessed it yet, but we had a mini recession in the middle of 2022. This would immediately send us into a very deep recession. I don't know if it would last long enough to be a depression, but it would sure look like one, and we would have high unemployment, such as you said. We would lose, I don't know, I heard you said 5%, I've heard 3%, I've heard 8%, whatever it is, we would immediately see the economy contract massively. And also, I mean, you know, we don't even know if these estimates are right. This would be one of those truly sort of existential experiences, you know, that we really have no way of estimating until it happens. And I personally don't want to know any better than I can guess what would happen.
No, I want this to remain uncharted territory. I don't want to go to that territory. So, talking with Peter Earle, economist with the American Institute for Economic Research, AIER.org, their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. And also, too, with the current state of the economy and the growth that you made the various references to, catching up to a debt default would be challenging, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You know, once the agreement is reached and the numbers are set, okay, now we got to get there.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, I scratched some notes the other day. There are probably six possible outcomes at this point. The one I think is the most likely is a bill or some other last-minute arrangement to buy time. Now, if it seems to the average person listening to this, who has a job and doesn't think about this stuff all the time, if it seems like this seems to be happening more often, it's because it is. The treadmill is going faster and faster, and more we have these sort of contentious butting of heads by the various parties or sides, more and more what they're doing is they're basically just passing these sort of stopgap measures to reach, you know, the next year or the next 8 months. So if we were to have that sort of thing in the next 2 weeks, where McCarthy and the White House would say, okay, we're going to put this off, we would be in this exact same position probably in February of 2024.
How much of a hindrance has it been that there is no actual federal budget? They just do a continuing resolution year after year. I mean, this goes past through the past administrations, party be damned. It just seems to be economic irresponsibility. Unless that's addressed, are we ever going to get out from this happening again and again and again, as you say?
Well, I mean, the thing is that, as we say in economics, demand curves slope downward. And there is an appetite out there for U.S. Treasuries, but that appetite is already showing some signs of dwindling. You know, we additionally have increasing signs that although it would take decades to happen, there is more and more interest abroad in moving away from the U.S. dollar. My point is that as debt increases, as spending ratchets up, as the U.S. government on both sides, as you said, demonstrates that they have less and less regard for any sort of sober spending and all that sort of thing, eventually the market for our treasuries and the use of the dollar and all of those things are going to start to slip. It may take a while, but when the end comes, it will be with a whimper and not with a bang.
I mean, is it possible for the rest of the world? I don't see them going, you know, swarming onto the euro or the yen. But can a world economy exist on the gold standard and leave the American dollar in the dust?
Well, the thing is, there are some alternatives, and I don't even think that they would move. I mean, again, you know, this is a huge thing. To get away from the dollar would take decades, but there are a few currencies out there which are probably I mean, certainly not the Chinese yuan or the Russian ruble, but there are some which are which could serve as a sort of a an interim or a bridge. You know, the euro is one, that sort of thing. But also, I think that you know, we've got a situation where we are really sort of swamping the world with our debt. And I mean, who wants to be the one holding American Treasury debt when we say, you know, we've got to negotiate, you know, less payments, we've got to negotiate down our debt service because we simply can't pay it? Or does anybody want to receive dollars which are rapidly losing value because they have to be monetized, because the Fed has to print the money because debt service is, you know, a huge part of the budget? I mean, these are all the things that are happening right now. And I can't say exactly how it'll wrap up, but I can say that we are closer to the end than the beginning, whether that means months or years or a decade or two.
And certainly with letting other countries buy our debt for us to stay afloat, that just imprisons our economy into another country's whims, wills, whatever the case may be, which is not a position you want to be in either.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So there's a thing called the Triffin dilemma, which very roughly, it says that, you know, if another nation takes on enough of our debt, I mean, there's a couple of different versions of this scenario, but you could see that if another nation takes on enough of your debt, you eventually become a partner, right? You know, they used to say when I worked on Wall Street, we used to say, you know, if you lose $1 million, you become an ex-employee. If you lose $500 million, you become a partner.
Yeah.
Because you've got to work through that. But I mean, I don't think that's necessarily the case where, you know, some of our counterparties are already sort of lightening up on their treasury holdings and they're exploring other means of transacting. So, again, you know, I don't know where the end is, but, I mean, it's hard to imagine how much farther it can go. Although, again, in the economics, that could take the form of years or decades even.
He's an economist with the American Institute for Economic Research on the web, AIER.org. Peter Earle, thanks so much for your insight, for being here today.
Great to be here.